Okay, good morning, everybody. Great to see everybody. We should move the tables a little bit more together. We'll talk to Yanush about this. Great to see everyone. We are in the middle of Shoftim, and really at the end of Sefer Shoftim, in the middle of a very, very important story that caps off the book of Judges, which we will get to in a moment. I'm just going to remind everybody that we have not figured out yet. I'm taking votes for what we're going to do next. We can obviously continue on in Sefer Shoftim and go to Sefer Shmuel, or we can choose a completely different topic. We don't have to go in order necessarily. We go to something. I think somebody brought up Sefer Ezra Nehemiah as a possibility. Last year during Mincha Maariv, we did that for a little bit. We didn't get through a large part of the Sefer. That might be an option. Tehillim, somebody brought up also to go through Sefer Tehillim, but I am open to suggestions, and we could be beginning that very, very soon. I'm happy to hear. Good. We are in the middle of the Pilagish Begiva. What happened to Pilagish Begiva? We had a man who had a Pilagish. We don't know anybody's names in this story. That's like the challenging part. And part of the reason is why don't we know people's names? Usually in Chazal, don't tell us names. It's that either A, they're so evil, they're unimportant, therefore we don't have their name because we don't remember them in that way. Like Mishle says, Shame Rishayim Yirkav. The names of Rishayim we should not remember. They should be rotted out. But maybe there's another reason why. And the other reason why is maybe this is indicative of not just them, this individual, but this is really representative what they did. Their actions represent what the entire people were doing. So they did it, but really it's a group of people that, or the Klal Yisrael in general, are representative of what happened in this story. And that's really where Chazal is pointing us towards in the story. A man has a pilagesh, and they separate. It's unclear exactly why they separate. She runs home to her father's home. After either a year and 4 months, or just after a few months, he goes back to get her. The father-in-law really likes this guy, and he wants to keep him along for a while. And that plays into the story, because eventually, on the fourth or fifth day, he takes her. They don't leave right away in the morning, which is the best thing to do if you're leaving, you know, in ancient times. You leave right in the morning. This way, you have enough daytime to travel. And then you know be'erech, approximately where you're going to sleep at night. He left later in the day. Therefore, when he's trying to find lodging at night, it was in a place that he was not prepared to go to. It was in Sheva Binyamin. He could not find anybody. Nobody let him into their house. They were about to sleep on the street when they went to Giv'ah, and they found a man, a very nice person, who let them go into their house. So already you see there that the people are not into Hachnasas Orchim. This is not something that matters to them. They don't care about taking care of the stranger. This is not something that is part of their culture. Very similar to Sodom, right? There's a lot of overlap and similarities between these stories. And what do you know? Almost moments into allowing these people into his house, there's an angry mob that, you know, converges on this home. And they demand, right? They're going to murder everybody in the home unless the men, right? This man is taken out of the home, and they molest and rape the man. That's not what happens. What happens in the end is that the man is not taken out, but the man sends out the pilagesh, his pilagesh, and the wife of the house. The pilagesh comes back the next morning after being brutally, brutally raped and molested the entire night. She can't make it to the door, right? She the imagery is very, very powerful, that she just sort of reaches towards the doorknob, opens it up for like a moment. He sees her. He slept that night. We discussed this at length, how horrible that is, that he can sleep the entire night. And he wakes up in the morning ready to find her and leave, right? And who could sleep at night? That's what's happening. Who could sleep in? And he finds her, you know, dead at the doorway. He immediately, and again, Honey had some strong words to say about this. Yeah. This might be why he left. Right.
He's not
Right. 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 I mean, the malachim deserve protection. You know, maybe they deserved some type of protection. Right. 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 And as a result of the story, he gets very angry. He takes his pilegesh and cuts her up into 12 pieces. And he sends each of them to, presumably, we don't know this exactly, presumably to each one of the heads of the tribes of the Shvatim to show, how can this happen? This is a Navala, this is a Toev, it's horrific that this can happen. This should be a wake-up call to all of the other nations. And this is where we begin chapter 20. Again, I'm reviewing because I feel like every Monday for the past 2 months, I've been on and off with this. Yeah. No. The refrain in the last four, the refrain in the last four chapters of this of Shoftim is Ubayamim Ahim, Ein Melech Yisrael, Ish Kol Yasher Be'ein Av Yasa. Okay. That's a big machlokes. That either, right, the last shofet that we met was Shimshon, which we pointed out, and this is not it, that the, many of the farshim point this out, that the shoftim are reflective of the people. And I'm not going to call Shimshon corrupt. It's murky. It's, right, Shimshon is a very misunderstood, very difficult character to understand. He was very involved with non-Jewish women. Again, were they, did they convert? Did they not convert? That we learned. We learned the Rambam, and we went through some sources that say, yeah, they converted beforehand, but it's a little bit murky. So some say it's really coming off of that story, and this is where we're this is where we're coming from. And others say that this is the beginning of Shoftim. This happened, this story, this is maybe even more shocking in a certain way, that Yehoshua ends, Shoftim begins, and what's in the middle of Yehoshua and Shoftim? Two stories. Pesel Micha, the story of, right, the person that started a base of Avodah Zarah, house of idol worship, in the middle of the Jewish people, a Jewish house of idol worship, if such a thing could be said, and the Pilagish Begiva. It happened in the middle. And then Shoftim happened. Meaning, so it's not clear. If it happened then, when Yehoshua dies, right? Yehoshua dies, and then there's like a vacuum of leadership that's left after such a powerful and dynamic leadership. It's that then where the loss of Moshe Rabbeinu is felt more than ever before. At least with Moshe, you have a distinct, you know, passing on. When Yehoshua dies, nobody passes on the leadership to somebody else, right? And you see that that's a challenge and a difficulty in leadership positions, also in, you know, in organizations, in companies. If they pass off that position from one to the other in a clear way, then there's a path forward. Then people could be, you know, the next generation could be successful. If that's not done well, then that handoff is not done well, and that could be a big failure for the next generation. Yeah, Sharon. Probably. I haven't seen it inside. It's a good point. Yeah. What's he supposed to take? Should he be taken to task, or should this have been the job of the people? It's not clear. It's not clear. No, there definitely was a void no matter what. Whether you take this approach that Pilagish Begiva and happened then or not, we learn the first few chapters of Shoftim, nothing going on. We're just recounting that there's a lot of Gentiles who are idol worshippers that are left in the land of Israel that sort of are influencing the Jewish people. Yeah, Mendy.
Rabbi, you mentioned this on Sunday. The difference between Moshe and Yehoshua was that Yehoshua,
Okay, yeah, it could be. Yeah, it's a great point. Okay, so where are we? We're in Perakid Pasigid Zion in the middle of chapter 20, but I'm gonna now catch us up. So what happens? That the Jewish people are very inspired, aroused, angry by what happened to this individual, this woman, and they want to exact justice on the perpetrators. And they feel that Binyamin did not do a good job and they didn't give them justice. And they feel like this is something that Klal Yisrael itself needs to ensure that something is done. And not getting political, but I think it's important to frame this in a very interesting way. So Binyamin is going to argue, let us take care, right? We are 12 Shvatim. Are we 12 individual Shvatim? Each one has our own rules. Or do we have rules that, you know, govern the entire nation altogether? And if somebody does something so wrong, maybe justice shouldn't be meted out by one individual Shevet, but should be meted out by everybody together, by the Sanhedrin Agadah, right? We have individual court systems, Shoftim v'shotrim, and then you have the Sanhedrin itself that meets out bigger cases, right? So here, Binyamin is telling the people, leave us alone. We're taking care of our own. This happened amongst us, horrific, egregious, should never happen again. Leave us alone. We'll take care of it. And the people, by the way, it's not just the people, it's 400,000 sword-yielding men, right? Are coming and saying, no, bring it to us because justice for this woman needs to be done in front of the whole nation. This is something very serious and very severe. And Binyamin brings out 26,000 people. Again, now look at this war. 400,000 against 26,000. The Navi tells us in Pasuk Tet Zayin that amongst these, or maybe amongst these 26,000, they have 700 men that are lefties, Iter Yad Yamina calls it Kolea Be'Evan, who are, you know, sharpshooters. They didn't have guns back then, they were sharpshooters, but they had Kolea Be'Evan. They were, what's it called? Slingshot.
Bow and arrow.
They had bow and arrows, but it wasn't. Kolea Be'Evan is a slingshot.
A stone,
yeah. So they were like expert slingshots. Right. So, yeah, like, again, Bart Simpson, that was the last person that we know that did slingshots. David Amalek did slingshots. But 26 versus 400,000, this is a very lopsided war, potentially. And that's like what's being framed over here. Who should take care of this? So let's learn in Sa'i Pasuk Yud Zayin. V'ish Yisrael hispagdu levad mibinanim arba meos elef ish sholeif cherev koza ishmacha. So 400,000 men are on the other side. All of them are soldiers in the army. V'yakumu v'yalu beis el v'ish alu beilu kim. Now, before they go to war, they ask God what to do. It doesn't mean they ask God what to do. Where are they going? What? The Urim V'Tumim, right? The Urim V'Tumim. This is one of, it's very rare in Tanakh to use the Urim V'Tumim. David uses it several times. It's not as frequent as we thought it would be. You know, maybe it was. There was other smaller things that are not mentioned in Tanakh, but it doesn't happen so much in the Tanakh itself that the Urim V'Tumim is used. Usually, it's in the context of Ur. That's usually where it's used. You tell me if this is the question you would ask if you were the one that was given the job to ask the question to your Urim V'Tumim. Who should go first to fight the war against Binyamin? Vayomer Hashem. Hashem responds, Yehuda Batchila. You agree or disagree with that question that was asked? Oh, very good. So, right? Many of them, Farshim, not all, but many of them, Farshim say, no, what do you mean? Wait, that's not the question. The question is, should we go to war? Did we miss a step here? Not should we, right? Who should? So that was in itself was a mistake. That was in itself, some of the Mefarshim say, was already a mistake.
So why did people do the mana? In other words, when you get a company as a question, you should ask, and you don't get an answer. By giving that answer, you're going to know.
Great. Vayomer Hashem, so you look at Hashem's answer is Yehuda should go first. So honey, you're asking a very good question. Why should the Urim V'Tumim even answer if they're asking the wrong question? So I think if we went back to Parsha Shlach, we can't have an answer. In Parsha Shlach, right, there's a big discrepancy between Devarim and Bamidbar in terms of who sends the Meraglim. Whose idea was it? Was it the people's idea or was it Moshe's idea? Rashi sort of puts the two together and says the people were pushing and pushing and pushing. And sometimes the answer is you have to let them do what they want to do. And you have to let them make their own mistakes. You can't always hold your kid's hand across the street. Right? Oh. Right? Like, okay, when they're 4, 5, 6, 7, shuffle their hand. At a certain point, you have to let them make their own mistakes. That's the way some understand Rashi in the beginning of Parsha Shlach, that Moshe did not think this was a good idea. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for sure, didn't think this was a good idea. And Shabbos, we discussed why Moshe made the decision. Yehoshua did. Good. So the Malbim addresses it. That's in this in the Haftorah from Shlach. Malbim mentions 5 differences between Yehoshua's spies and Moshe's spies. But one answer to this question could be that you're right, it's wrong, but you have to be asking the right question. And if they weren't, maybe Hashem is okay. I can't, right? Part of this world is free choice, and this is what you're doing. So now, Yehuda Batzchila, if you're asking me this question, I will give you the answer to your question.
So all of these thousands and thousands and thousands of people that were going in, yeah, did anyone ever told them that the sentence will matter? Oh. He just got a bypass that he was sentenced for man to be tortured. He's okay. And everybody else will be avenged.
You're right. We discussed this. We discussed this already. You're not. It could be A, he was, right? B, under duress, people make horrific mistakes, right? So maybe he's treated differently than somebody else in his situation, you know, in a different situation. Yeah.
Why did so many people feel that they had to avenge him? I mean, the
Pelagish
would be very low at the top, probably one from above the, Harlem. So,
yeah.
You know, why would they take her to...
I think that's a very good thing for the Jewish people, that they care about even a woman that's on this, like, if we're looking at status, especially in those days, that doesn't matter. She's a Jewish woman that was taken advantage of, and this is very wrong. And what the circumstances led to it is that it's a... it's something endemic amongst the Sheva Binyamin. We're concerned about them, and we need to do something. So we're going to use force. There's no leader here. There's no leadership. And when you have no leadership, no one's telling you, wait a little bit, let me talk to them, this is what we should do. When you have nobody, Barosh, then emotions are going to push the agenda through. It's not going to go through with a lot of COVID Rosh. It's not going to work that way.
You have some kind of point in place that
it's a fair question. 70 people without, again, somebody, the Melech Yosef Barosh, it's really hard to know. It's really hard to know. So the Chomas Enoch was the Chida. The Chida in his parish on Sefer Shoftim writes that Yehuda went first because the Jewish people also deserved to get punished at this time. Why? They let Pesel Micha happen. They let somebody, right, make a house of idol worship in, amongst the Shvatim. Yehuda should have been the one to step up and say, no, this doesn't happen on our land. Kaven Shalom Michu, since they did not protest or say a word against this, then he sees within this that there's retribution both ways. There's something coming to the people on both ends. Binyamin deserves something for what they did, and Yehuda is going to attack first, also deserves something, and that's why Kadosh Baruch, different answer. That's why Kadosh Baruch let this sort of go through with the Urim Tum.
Pesel actually in the territory of Yehuda?
Pesel was in.
I mean, I don't think so.
No, I think it was in Ephraim. But then it was eventually brought out through all of Israel. I think that was the issue. So they should have been the ones. They're the older brothers.
Yeah.
They're responsible, and they should have been the ones to say
right,
something.
But it sounds like it's almost an issue of jurisdiction.
Right, that's the way we said it. Yeah.
Hey, you know, did they do bad things? We'll take care of it.
Right, fair point. Yeah. State yeah.
Rights.
Right. So Chida sees like fault within Yehuda themselves. Yeah.
No problem. Sure.
Yeah, great, great point. We wanted you in person, Milty. For the record, I let you in, and somehow the Zoom wanted you to be here, present. Yeah. Good. You're right. We didn't have a clear approach. It's a good point. We know. Yeah.
We asked the question to the world before, did it ever just not light up? Just never give the answer. Did it ever happen?
Probably. Could be.
So, in theory, when they asked who should go first, it could have just not answered.
Yeah.
It could be.
I don't know enough about Urim V'Tumim. Like, I think we look at it. Ever see the movie Jumanji? That's the way I look at it. No? Okay.
Right.
It was in the 90s. 90s movie. Okay. But I don't know. It's hard to know how exactly it works. Good. Vayakumu b'nei Yisrael. Paskides. Vaboker vayachanu al givah. They, again, now we're moving forward, going closer, more aggressive approach towards givah. Vayetze ish Yisrael l'melchama im binyamin. Vayachu itam ish Yisrael l'melchama al givah. They start attacking. So what happens if they attack Binyamin? Binyamin is going to attack back. Going to fight back. Vayetzu b'nei Binyamin v'yegivah v'yeshchisu b'Yisrael b'yamahu. Shnayim v'esrim elef ish arza. Who wins the first battle? The battle of the Givah. Binyamin. 26,000 versus 400,000. Binyamin wins. They knock down. They kill. They destroy 22,000 men. So what do you do if your manpower is on your side? You get ready for war the next day. Say, we got to go. Next page. Vayevku lifnei Hashem ad ha'erev. The Jewish people that night start crying to God. Vayishalu v'Hashem le'mor. And they ask God again. Ha'usif l'geshet le'melchama. Should we continue approaching the war? L'geshet, by the way. Why is that a funny word? Like geshet le'melchama? Should be like lavo le'melchama? Lageshet. Lageshet. So a Rashi, maybe we learned as a younger age. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Right? Yosef, whenever Rashi tells us that Yosef prepared for three things. The word Vayigash means three things. Vayigash means he gave him, prepared to give him gifts. He also prepared for milchama, for war. And Vayigash means tefillah. And Rashi quotes different psukim that refer to this. Vayigash, lageshet is a word you use in war itself. Lageshet lemelchama im b'nei binyamin, achi, vayomer Hashem, alu elav. Go up against him. Using the art school translation, go up against him. So it seems like, right, that this war should continue. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So at this point, the war should go on. This helps the approach of the Chida, that there is a punishment here for both sides. And this is, you know, happening, recurring because of what happened previously to Pesach Micha. Yeah.
It was one shape that was on the front in the beginning here that forward. They had backup, so this one shape almost annihilated, or just the leader, and everybody was just.
I don't know. It doesn't seem that way. It doesn't seem that way, but we won't have a lot of evidence for that. It doesn't seem that. Way.
There was one shape, it could be totally.
We will see that Binyamin is going to be almost totally annihilated. That's going to be very significant. That's very few people from Binyamin are going to be left after this war. So. Vayikrivu, others say, I'm just seeing on the bottom, the others say that they are told to go now because of their arrogance the first time. The first time they asked the wrong question, so Hashem's saying, you want to go, you're going to go again. This is, you're in this now for the long haul. Vayikrivu b'nei Yisrael b'nei Binyamin b'yom ha'sheni, vayetzei Binyamin l'krasam min ha'giva b'yom ha'sheni, vayishlisu b'nei Yisrael od, Shmonas Asar Elef Ish Arta Ko Ela Sholfei Charef. Second day, and Binyamin destroys them again. 18,000 people. Vayalu Kol B'nei Yisrael V'chol Am Vayavo Beis El Vayivku Vayishvu Sham Lifnei Hashem. So the second day, they have a greater, say, spiritual religious response. So the first day, they cry out to God the entire night. Here, what's the next response? Vayatsumu bayomahu ad ha'erev. Fast. They just were fighting at war. To then take that upon yourself to fast is a pretty serious thing, right? It's hard enough to fast on a Sunday in the summer, right? That's like it's hard. It is, right? That's the way our bodies are constructed. This is a very serious thing. They took upon themselves. Ad ha'erev vayalu olos u'shlamim lifnei Hashem. And at night, they brought korbanos to Hashem. Again, this is before the Beis Hamikdash was around. And since the Beis Hamikdash was not around yet, they're allowed to bring korbanos outside the Beis Hamikdash on bumps. Vayeshalu b'vinei Yisrael b'Hashem. V'sham arom bris ha'alukim b'yamei mahim. They asked Hashem again, and now the Navi's pointing out, you know what's with them? The arom. The Torah tells us in, I think it's Parshat Ekev, that whenever the Jewish people go out to war, they always bring the Aron Hashem. It's Machlokas Rashi in the Ramban, whether it's literally the Aron that we know and love from the Mishkan, that one, or they had a second one that was only used in times of war, right? And that goes into probably the second most significant story in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, is that when the Jewish people went out to war against the Plishtim, they lost the Aron Bris Hashem. And Rashi and the Ramban, who have this machlokas in Parshas in Sefer Devarim, go into read that into the story there. How significant was it? Was this like the secondary one, or was this the main one that that was taken? So they have the Aron with them, and guess who's here? Right? Guess who's coming to the party? Upinchas ben Elazar ben Aron Omeid Lefanav. How old, right? How old was Pinchas at this time? Pinchas is around. No, we haven't yet learned about him in the Torah yet, this time around. And Pinchas is here. Leimor ha'usif od latzis ha'melchamayim b'nei b'yamin. Achi, imechdal. So now they ask the question to Pinchas. By the way, this is very important because on two levels, on a simple level, this, for those that say this story happened at the end of Sefer Yoshua, yeah, okay, I understand. Pinchas could still be alive. Yoshua died at the age of, I don't know, 110. 10 years less than Moshe. 110. He was 82 when he entered the land of Israel, 28 years to divide and conquer. And he died at 110. So Pinchas, we don't know exactly his age, but it's probably around the same age as Yoshua. So today, to say he's living to like 120, 125 is not, okay, guessing the whole thing about Moshe Rabbeinu being the last one to 120, it's not so clear if that's accurate, but that's fine. But to say that he's living at the end of Shoftim, many of the Shoftim were at 30, 40, you know, years of reign. So that's like another 350 years. That makes him like closer to Metushelach than to Yehoshua. And that's challenging within itself, unless we understand Chazal, that Chazal say that who was Eliyahu Navi? It's Pinchas, right? So Pinchas zu Eliyahu, right? That's a Zohar. So not on my birthday yesterday, called the Zohar. So that within itself is hard. But maybe this is where Chazal is already saying, right? Kabbalistically, we see it in the Psukim. How can he be so old? The Pasuk mentions him later on. There are a minority of Mefarshim that say this is not the same Pinchas. Ah. It's a different Pinchas. Just hard to say because Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, right? He was the Kohen Gadol at the time. Aaron died, Elazar took over. That's Parshas Chukas. And then Pinchas took over for him after Elazar died. Yeah.
Is this the largest type of situation where we see one Jew fighting against another? A situation, especially Korach, but nothing, is there anything on this magnitude that we've ever seen before where brother has split against brother?
No.
So I think you have to say also, like, you know, they lost the two battles, there's really never a winner in this type of situation. You have such a fighting of such a magnitude with so many people, there's never a winner.
That's what's sad about, you know, when all things you see about in the news, there's not really a winner. It's very sad. People are going to be divisive at the end of the day.
We had America.
Yeah. Very sad. Brothers killing, you know, they're literally brothers killing brothers here too. It's people murdering each other. In the beginning of Sefer Shmuel Beis, after Shaul dies, and it's another mini civil war. Mini because it's not the whole people, but it's representative of them. When Shaul dies, and there's again another vacuum of leadership, nobody really knows that Shmuel, anointed David as the next leader. So there's a group of people, all Shaul's like loyal people, take Shaul's son Ishbosheth to be the next king, and the other people take David to be the next king, and David's sort of like the king over Yehuda. And Shaul's the king over everybody else. Yishbosheth's the king over everybody else. And at one point, they sort of meet up accidentally. I don't know. Like, it happened that they were traveling and they both, like, lodged at the same place and they ended up murdering each other. Right? There was so much anger and hatred towards one another. And it happened there, too. Again, in Malachim, also when the kingdom split up, you know, certain things happen, and it's horrible. It's horrible. There are no winners in things like this. There are no winners. So Pinchas, they go to Pinchas. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron, Omed lefana b'yamim ahim leimor ha'usif od latzis lenochama im bnei binyamin achi imechda. Yom Hashem alu ki machar ten rabiyadav. Hashem says, now go up, and now it's Binyamin's turn to get punished for what they did. Right? The Yasem Yisrael or Vim Elagivas Aviv, they sort of have like a plan where they're going to set up an ambush against the Jewish people. It seems like if you learn Tanakh, it's like the best strategy they always had was an ambush. It's like why didn't they think of an ambush right away? I don't know. You'll see in Yehoshua did this in Ai. In the beginning of Sefer Yeshua, he first fights Yericho. He doesn't really fight Yericho. They would miraculously destroy Yericho. That was really Miyad Hashem. And they were overconfident and they fight against Ai and they lose. Ai was a tiny city. They lose 36 people in Ai. And then they're like, we have a plan. Let's do an ambush. It's like, wait, what are you doing in the first place? Like now it's like third time around, we're going to do an ambush. That's like the move that they do. That's like the brilliant military strategy of the time. Obviously, ambush means different things in different times. 1967, it was an ambush too. They dropped the missiles on the Egyptian Air Force Base before they thought, before anyone thought they would do anything. They go towards the Giva like they did the past 2 days. Vayitzu b'nei binyamin likras am han tiku minahar vayechalu lahakos me'am chalim kipam apam b'misilos asher achas olam beis el v'achas givasa basadak kishloshim ish Yisrael. So what do they do? They line up, they chase Binyamin up the mountain, but at the same time they place a lot of their people on the other side of the mountain. So when Binyamin's running down, running away from them, here they are to attack them. Vayomru b'nei Binyamin. B'nei Binyamin say, Nigafim heim lefanenu kibarishona. Right? They think, they're coming to us, we're going to win. U'b'nei Yisrael amru anusa unintakinuha. Mina ir ela misilos. So they say, let us try to, right? They start running away. And as they run away, there are people that attack them from the side. V'chol ish Yisrael kamu min komo, me'erchu b'val tamar, v'orev Yisrael, me'giach min komo min ma'arei gava, v'yavo minegel v'giva, esar salafim ish b'chor mikol Yisrael, v'chamak v'edam, v'heim lo yadu ki nogas aleim hara'a. Right? And this is, and they fight a war, and many people from Binyamin are struck down and are killed in this war. But the last few words are the key words here. V'heim lo yadu. And this is Mendy, you said this before. There's no winners in this war. Ki nogas aleim hara. Nobody knows here that this is so horrible that this has to happen, that this is happening right now. That people on both sides made a decision to move forward this way. This is all happening. And like, this is like, we're sort of like Hashem reflecting on the story. Or it's really the author of Sefer Shoftim, right? Writing this, reflecting who wrote Sefer Shoftim. And he said, Shmuel, Kinogas Aleim Hara. They don't realize what's going on here. Shmuel saying, I see what's happening. Many years later, right? And we realize this is horrible. This is so sad. So it's had to happen, right? The civil war till today is the, how many people murdered and killed in the civil war? 40,000. Wow. No, more. It's the most people still, right? That have been killed in American war.
Much more than that.
I mean, it's not for, no, it's much more. It's much more. Yeah. Vayigaf Hashem es Binyamin lefnei Yisrael ve'eshritu b'nei Yisrael b'Binyamin b'yomahu esrim mechamisha elef u'me'a ish kol eila sholev cherev. Does anybody remember the number of soldiers from Binyamin that went out to war? 26,000. How many were killed here? 25,100. So think of the male population after this war, right? The male population of Binyamin after this war is not going to be so significant. And that's going to be very important for Binyamin to recover from this war, because one of the results of this war is that the Jewish people are not going to allow people to marry from Sheva Binyamin as a result of this, which is very significant. That's the celebration of Tu B'Av. That's in Tu B'Av, the day of marriage. So it was lifted. That was lifted where Binyamin was now allowed to marry within the confines of the rest of Klal Yisrael. Okay, well, we will stop here for today, and Bezrat Hashem continue next week. Have a great day, everyone.